So Fast and Furious live this weekend at the SSC Arena. I was there last night to get a flavour of what you're going to expect, what you're going to get whenever you go there this weekend. And I hooked up with Chris Burns and Jessica Hawkins. And it was actually Jess who took me around the track. And I decided that we had so much fun that I'd invite them in for a chat about the show. How are you doing, Jess?
I'm great, thanks. How are
good
you?
To see you. Yeah, I've survived. I survived it. How are you doing, Chris?
Good
to
all
see
good.
You again.
All good. Yeah, good to see you too.
Happy days. So are you all fired up for this? Are you geared ready for it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's Chris's hometown, so it's great. Not hometown. I mean, I think you were from here, weren't you?
Yeah.
Lives in Ireland, so it's great to be here. And we've got two other drivers as well, Johnny and Derek, who are from Ireland. So, yeah, it's good to be in their home turf.
How did you get involved with it, Jess?
So I was racing, I started in karting when I was 8 years old. I was British Open champion when I was 12, I think. And then it kind of went on from there. I moved into cars. The biggest race that I ever did was in a Formula 3 car in Bahrain. And then the budget ran out and we were looking for a direction to go in. And this job opportunity came up at the right time. And I was lucky enough to get in as one of the 11 stunt drivers. And I've just never looked back, really. It's been the most fantastic thing that I've done for my career. Mm. Really enjoying it. The show's incredible. And to be a part of it is amazing.
Yeah, well, you were definitely enjoying it last night when you were taking us all around our first spin. And what was it happened whenever Guy got in? Was it the tire blew out or what happened? Or was it just like you just run out of tire?
We just ran out of tire and it just went a bit, it went bang. the surface didn't help. It was quite a rough surface. I think it was a bit more like rallying at the time, but yeah. It was still a good laugh.
It was really good fun, yeah.
You can, with all 11 drivers have fallen in love with Lexus IS200s, which are our training cars at Fast Camp. So anytime we get to hoon about in them, we love it.
You love it. Chris, how did you get involved? You're a man from Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Were you always in the cars when you were
So yeah, we were talking about this last night. So my mum and dad telling me that my first word was actually car when I was a baby. So obviously my life was destined to go on some sort of crazy path. And I've always been massively involved in the car scene within Northern Ireland. And I have a real love of cars, all forms of motorsport, I guess. And at a very young age, I decided that this was something that I really wanted to do. So my story, if you like, you could wrap it up and sort of say it's a story of never give up on your dreams, because I had a professional career in a whole different industry, but I always was doing this like on a part-time thing.
Was your hobby sort of thing, was it?
As a hobby and as an interest, but I mean, I wanted to, I always wanted to carve out, it's a very niche market and it's a very hard market to crack into. And it's like you and I spoke about yesterday, when you're from here, no matter what you're doing in life, it's almost like you have to try harder. You have to try harder to succeed, and I recognized that, and I never really gave up on my dream, and I just kept pushing and trying, and there was good times, there was bad times, there was times when I thought to myself, this is never going to happen, and you should never give up on your dream, no matter what it is, well, because it could be the very next day, so.
Yeah, well, let's, for the listeners who don't know, your title is, apart from being a stunt driver, your title is Director of Procurement of Vehicles, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, well, not director, so I'm lead stunt driver and vehicle procurement, which basically means that my role within the production was to design a process to find all of the drivers, assist them obviously with their training, and I have to stress, as I did yesterday, all our drivers are really, they come from a very strong pedigree, they're all massively talented in their own right. But what we do within arena driving is a very specialist skill set, and it's something that only a handful of people have ever really done in the world. Mm. So I was sort of in charge with the process of how we would audition those guys, how we would help train them, and how we would get them ready for our opening in the 19th of January at the O2 with Vin Diesel. And aside from that, then I was tasked with basically sourcing all the cars for the show. So all the cars that you'll see when you come to see the show, I had to buy those. And
Did you travel around the world again?
I did, yeah. There was a lot of emails and phone calls and flights and everything else, but perhaps with hindsight, I sort of give myself a month time frame, and I sort of said to my boss, was like, oh, I'll do this in a month, and he was like, oh, okay. And I really put myself under quite a bit of pressure to do that, but we had a lot to do within a year. So and I remember buying the last car that I bought for the production, actually was the little Honda S2000, and I remember I bought it away up the north of England, and it was a really wet, miserable winter's evening, and it was February, and I remember driving down the road, big smile, because like that was the last car, and it'd been to America, it got all the stuff from America, everything was in build or on its way, so that was box ticked, and then I could concentrate on the driving side of things.
How long does it take to pull a show like this together? Because
normally it takes a few years, but there was a few years of this show getting over the line, if you like, and then we had the green light just before Christmas 16. And it was really weird because some of the guys that are involved in the show I've been friends with for many years, and we had a few ups and downs along the way, so you know, we got the green light and we should have been like super elated, but somewhere inside us we're going, oh, we have to actually build this now.
Uh-huh.
And there was so much work to do. So it was like almost, you know, Christmas was almost cancelled. And it was like, as soon as that was over, it was like literally all hands to man the pumps and get the thing built. So there's been an incredible amount of really talented people that have worked awfully hard to get the show to where it is, to get us to launch in time. So we basically done it within 12 months. And like, that's unheard of for a show of this scale. And, you know, we've been really, really, we're just so lucky that we've had so many helpful people and so many people that are very talented. And obviously with the guidance of Universal helping us along the way and everything, it's been quite a remarkable journey.
It wouldn't be easy to do, even if you think about it. If you look at the size of the arena, Jess, and you've got all these cars. I mean, many cars are on there at once on the floor. I mean, there's maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 cars all at once. I mean, it must be really difficult to choreograph that. How do I say that word? Choreograph that. That's what I'm trying to say. It must be really difficult to do that with all those cars moving about at that speed without hitting each other.
Luckily, we didn't have anything to do with the choreography. I mean, we kind of help here and there. If there's something that needs changing, we kind of all kind of get to the drawing book and work together to see how we can fix it. But there's a very talented guy called Colin who worked very hard to do what he did to figure out all the choreography. And he started with a little sketchbook with a bit of a pencil and wrote basically the whole show, or at least the car side of things. And within 1 second, he of his drawings were correct with the driving. So he's an incredible guy, and it's very, very hard. As I say, as you said, there's, you know, 5, 6, 7 cars in a, you know, 50 by, I think, 24 meter arena. And kind of, we've had some feedback when people arrive, they see the size of the arena and they're like, you know, what can be done in there? And they're just, you know, it blows their mind what we're able to do in such a small arena.
Are the cars a fly? Because somebody told me there's flying cars in that arena.
We have this kind of company motto, and it's something that's been instilled in a few of us that have worked together for years, and it's basically that nothing's impossible. And literally nothing is impossible if you apply your mind and you have the funding or whatever. But there's a very much a nothing's impossible kind of vibe to what we were doing. And a very good story is, so Roland French, our creative director, who it's his show, you know, he's built this show. It was originally his idea. Roland went off to LA to see a pre-edit of Fast 8. So we came back and he called myself and Simon, our director, into the office, and he was like, so this happens and that happens and this submarine breaks through the ice. And he was telling us all what happens. And we were like, okay. And then he was like, so you need to go and find out how you're going to build the submarine and stuff. And we were like, oh, okay. So we literally got up expressionless from his office. We walked around the corner into Simon's office, sat down, and the two of us just looked at each other and burst out laughing. I was like, how are we going to build a submarine? You know, don't be ridiculous. But we managed to find a way to do it. And you know what? It's one of the sequences.
What a challenge, though.
I know, yeah. Really, there's nothing's impossible if you figure it out, but we do toy shop at the end of the show, so people who have toy shop tickets get the opportunity to come and meet all us and see the cars and get their pictures with us, some autographs, and get up close and personal to the actual hero cars. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's probably the most enjoyable part of the show, because we actually get to speak to people and ask people what they like the most.
Yes.
And the amount of kids that say, oh, I couldn't believe the submarine. So that makes it all worthwhile. Yeah. You know, things like that
brilliant.
Make it all, you know.
Well, tell me, because there's so many things I want to know about this show. The lights, the 44,000 LED lights on one of those cars.
One of the sequences that we do is that we recreate the Miami street race scene from Too Fast, Too Furious, which anyone who's a fan of the movies will be able to relate to. So we've got a Mazda RX-7, we have a Toyota Supra, Honda S2000, and an R34 GTR Skyline. And this is one of the most theatrical pieces of the show, if you like. So our show isn't just a load of cars driving around. We have a lot of incredible technology, which we've dubbed environment mapping. So we project onto the set and we project onto the floor, and everything moves as one. So we can actually create an environment. So there's a lot of theatre to the show as to go along with the cars. And the LED sequence is really a showcase of that. So we have a company called Feeding the Fish, who we've worked with before. They're based in London. And they took these cars and they've installed 44,000 LEDs on each one of these cars. Now, the labour alone involved in that is phenomenal. But what's even more impressive is we had to get those guys they had to write the program, and they had to basically design what those LEDs were going to do. So they have had to tell each one of those LEDs what colour to light and for what duration. Now, the sequence is just shy of 7 minutes long. It took two guys 8 months solid to write the programs alone for those, just that one sequence.
That's
so
unreal.
It gives you an idea of just how much work's been involved in the show.
Yeah, and these are the sort of things that I think people are going to be really fascinated with whenever they go and see the show. And the other thing that I was going to ask you about, I haven't got a lot of time, but you were talking to me last night about the tires and the fact that, you know, a lot of this this show was projected onto the floor of the arena. And if you imagine that the black tire marks are going to leave, and then you can't really do the show properly. So you had to change that.
So again, back to sitting in a boardroom and Rolly and one of his crazy ideas. So we're sitting there and we decided to do this environment mapping and everything was all good. And they were like, we need a light coloured surface to project onto, hence our floor is grey. And instantly that presented the problem that if we used traditional tires, they would leave black marks and eventually, before even the show would be halfway through, it would wash out the projection and you wouldn't be able to see it on the floor at all. So we're sitting in the boardroom and Rolly goes, right, well, we'll have to get grey tires. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Because
you've never seen grey tires in your life.
There's a reason tires are black, you know, and there's a reason we're not all driving around in cars with multicoloured tires. So this was like something that had never been done before. It was an impossible task. So, yeah, we approached myself and a girl, Emily, was working with us at the time. We approached many different tire manufacturers trying to see if they could help us with our predicament. And some companies said it was impossible. Some said they thought they could do it, but it would cost too much money. And we went to who is now our tire partner, Nankang. And we went and seen those guys. We had a meeting with them and we left. And they know this, so I'll not lie. I left the meeting thinking, this isn't going to happen. And 2 weeks later, the guy who owns the factory in Taiwan called me up and he said, Chris, I have some tires to send you to try. He says, give me an address. So I give him an address. He overnighted them across and we tried them and they had cracked it. So basically, they found a way of manufacturing tires that left no black marks whatsoever.
How did they do it? In brief, how did they do it?
Without going totally geeky, there's a component called carbon black in every tire, be it for a bicycle or a truck or a car or whatever. Carbon black is what makes tires really durable. They managed to find a way to remove that compound from the tire manufacturing process and they've replaced it with a hybrid silica, which they've basically invented to allow them to do this. But as a byproduct, if we had our tires, you've seen them, they look like normal tires, but if I put a traditional tire beside it, one would look slightly grey, one would look jet black. Mm-hmm. But as a byproduct, the tires have actually become much harder wearing than a normal tire and they emit less sort of fumes, which is perfect. So they've literally invented the perfect tire for what we need.
That is brilliant. And you're part of that. You've been part of that process.
So Simon's our sort of production director. He's pulled everything together for this show. And I remember trying the tires and I called him up. I was like, Simon, you're not going to believe this. They've done it. And he was driving down the M6 or something at the time. And he's like, really? And the two of us were like, yay. You know, because it was a real.
Because that's the future.
Yeah. It was a massive hurdle to overcome. And we've done that. And, you know, I have no doubt this, the process that has been used to do the tires for this show will inevitably make its way into the tires that we use day and daily in 10, 20 years' time.
I love that. Right, everybody remember that. In the future, we'll always remember Chris Burns told us the story first.
Yeah.
Jess, I was going to ask you, what's it like working with a lot of guys? And I don't really like to go down that road of women and men in car racing, but let's face it, there's more men than women do this. So how do you feel whenever you're doing that? I mean, is it competitive? Are they supportive? Do you feel you've got to prove yourself? How do you feel as a young woman?
No, they're really supportive, and I wouldn't say that we're singled out as females within the team. I think that we're as much as a part of the team as what the guys are within the racing, and I've been used to it. Obviously, I grew up racing since I was 8, so I guess I'm just used to it, and there's no kind of, you know.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that. I am delighted to hear it. So what are you going to do in the future at Formula One?
I was tipped for it a few years ago, but I'd say, you know, never say never. We'll see, but at the moment, I'm really enjoying Fast and Furious Live. That's where my heart lies at the minute, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Oh, any tips for any young women out there here thinking about taking this up on a serious level?
Yeah.
Maybe they have it as a hobby at the minute.
Yeah, for sure. When I was 8 and I started, I was one of very, very, very few females within the sport, and obviously I've been in it for a fair few years now, and it's definitely becoming more accepted for women to be within the sport, which is great, and I just hope that grows. And stereotypically, females prefer horse riding, ballet, something along those lines. And, you know, if they want to have a go, just go and have a go. You might love it.
Yeah.
And as I say, it is becoming far more accepted for females to be within the sport, which is great.
Yeah.
Like Carolyn, our driving team is made up of 11 drivers, and we have a wonderful dynamic. So our youngest is 20, our oldest is 53. Our 53-year-old arguably is less mature than our 20-year-old. But that's a whole other story. But what you're touching on there about the drivers, you know, Jess and Michelle and Jody are three female drivers. They are every single bit as good as any of the guys in the team. Every single bit. And
well, they wouldn't be there otherwise.
Exactly, it's not even that. If we could have, you know, it's hard. There's a smaller pool of lady drivers that can do this. Mm. But I mean, anyone that's listening in and fancies giving this a go, like, don't give up, because it's certainly something that anyone could do. You know what I mean? It's there really is no divide, and there's no reason for a divide.
Yeah.
We're 2018, the world's a different place now.
Absolutely.
And like, give it a go, you know?
For sure. If anybody has any questions, I'd love to help out with, you know, how to get into things for females and stuff like that. Just message me, you know, on social media or anything.
Okay.
I'd love to help out.
Just look, you're looking up for Jessica Hawkins. You'll find Jessica on social media if you've any questions you'd like to ask. I could ask you questions all day. It's great to get a wee bit of a glimpse behind the scenes of the show, you know, but listen, good luck. I know you've got 4 shows coming up over the next few days.
Yeah, so we're just
kicking off tomorrow.
We're just looking out the window to see if the guys are walking past. We're just about to go over and tip all the cars into the arena now, so yeah.
All right, very good.
Stuff's getting real.
What time are the shows and how long do they last?
So we have 8 o'clock on Friday, and we have 2 shows Saturday, a matinee show in the afternoon, and 8 o'clock again Saturday evening, and then we have a Sunday show. And the shows last approximately 2 hours with a 20-minute intermission in
between. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much, Chris Burns.
Thank you very much.
And good luck for the future. Also yourself, Jess. Thank you. All the best. See you soon.